Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2014. Lecture 7, delivered on September 10, 2014. The title of this lecture is Review of Accounting.
Today, Review of Accounting. This is the heart of the darkness that will be your accounting experience here, which is not very much accounting we will do, but I want to go through basics with you of accounting. First of all, taking it a little away from just pure accounting, you've all had accounting here. I can see it in your eyes, the vacant 1,000-yard stare in your eyes that you had accounting. Some of you were able to deal with it. Some of you were more fragile. Some of you have thought about doing awful things to yourself because of it. Okay, now, financial statements that come from accounting. What are the big two, the two that are the most important? Oh, you're good. Income statement and balance sheet. That's exactly right. Now, I caution you that I'm going to tell you things that you might not have ever heard in accounting, but I'm not telling you something that's wrong. It's just that accountants wouldn't say things quite this way. The income statement is actually a magnified detail of the balance sheet. The income state is nothing but a magnified detail of a part of the balance sheet, specifically your retained earnings section. You remember in the retained earnings section, you will have your retained earnings beginning of the period minus plus your net income minus your dividends, and that becomes your retained earnings at the end of the period. That's on your balance sheet. By the way, write down these formulas if you don't remember them. I'm sure most of you have memorized these formulas. But these are critical for being able to fill out this little worksheet of mine, is knowing how these formulas fit together. Notice here, net income. Well, that's what the income statement is. That it gets you to net income. Revenues minus cost of goods sold is your gross income, minus your selling, general, and administrative expenses, minus your depreciation. That brings you to your operating income, and we call that, you're probably more likely to hear me call that, earnings before interest and taxes. That's the way we, in the business, in finance, you'll hear us call it EBIT or EBIT. We don't usually say operating income, but they are the same thing. And then you take out your interest, and you come to your income before taxes. And we usually write that as EBT. You'll hear me call the income before taxes just EBT, earnings before taxes. And then, take away your taxes, and you will come down to your net income, which is what that is right there. So in other words, the income statement is actually just a detailed calculation for the balance sheet. rather important one, that net income kind of, we get a little excited about that, but it's just a detail for the balance sheet. Another one, that income statement. Okay, now, as far as balance sheets go, very quickly here, you're going to have on one side your assets. And on the other side, you're going to have your liabilities and owner's equity. So in other words, your second formula that you would might want to know for that worksheet, so you can put the puzzle together, would be that assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. Now, as a slight caution, in financial analysis, which I'm going to teach you how to do a little late, actually next week, in financial analysis, we oftentimes look at American corporations, but if you ever run into European corporations, interestingly enough, something that kind of fogged my mind is that they would refer to liabilities and owner's equity as external liabilities and internal liabilities. That was just the wording that I ran into enough times that I finally figured out what they were talking about. In other words, liabilities, what we call liabilities, is what they see as what we owe to the outside world. What we call owner's equity, they see as internal liabilities, the liability we owe to the internals, the owners of the company. So just know that if I show you a European financial statements, you might see that on them. Now, on the asset side, you'll have your current assets, which include things like cash and marketable securities, accounts receivable, inventory, prepaid expenses will be in there, and those add up to your total current liability, current assets. And then you have your long-term assets. And they have all kinds of different names, but we usually say your gross fixed less your accumulated depreciation is your net fixed assets. And that's your long-term, total long-term liabilities. Could have some other things in there like goodwill, stuff like that, amortizations and stuff like that. And then you add up these two together and you get your total assets. And I'm just giving you some names of things along the way here. And then on liability side and owner's equity side, first we do liabilities. And those are in two categories. The short-term liabilities or current liabilities. Let me call them current liabilities. And I'm breaking it down like this because we care about this for financial analysis. Current liabilities, those include a couple of things, like accounts payable would be there, short-term debt. And one I want, I'm just going to say it. Don't put it down, but I'll say it. You're going to see on financial statements sometimes, in the current liabilities, something called current proportion of long-term liabilities. In other words, in long-term liabilities, you have your bonds and things like that that you owe, say $50 million, and you're paying that down over time. The part that is due very soon, they will shuttle up here to the current liabilities section. That's important in finance because we want to know things about what their total long-term exposure is. So when we see that long-term debt, we want to look up here and say, oh, there's a little tiny piece of that long-term debt that's up here. So we usually actually put that back in down here just so we get a clearer picture of the total long-term exposure. Like I said, don't write it down for now. It's not that important right now, but I'll bring it up again when we get to financial statements so you don't get surprised by that. And you've got things like your wages payable can be in here, salaries and wages payable, dividends that are now due. In other words, you'll have these exposures. You've declared, I owe this, but you haven't paid it yet. So that would be up here in the current liabilities. But anyway, you got your total current liabilities. And then we'll have our long-term liabilities. The biggest one of those is your long-term debt. It can have all kinds of different names, and that's why we're going to spend time next week looking at a bunch of different corporations, just quick looks at their financial statements, because there are so many different ways that things can be named in financial statements. Just getting it so that we know what different things mean. There can also be other things here. You can have to account for exposures to potential lawsuits that are going to cream you. A lot of different things. But for the most part, that long-term debt is the big thing. Total long-term liabilities. And then you add up the total current and the total long-term. That's your total liabilities. And then you got your owner's equity. Well, I don't know why they think I really can't live without that being on. Owner's equity. There's a long history behind this. Common stock. Let me give you an example of a company that I created some years back. Well, actually, my currently alive company. I declared 1,000 shares of common par value, 1 cent per share. Now let's say that I sold that stock. Let's say that I sold 500 shares. 500 shares, and I sold each of them for $10 per share. So in other words, I took in a total of $5,000. I can't just write that as common stock $5,000, because the par value of 1 cent on 500 shares would be $5. So the way I actually have to put that into the accounting is common stock at par, $5, additional paid in capital, $495, for a total of $500. There are a lot of corporations anymore that declare a zero par value on their stock. I've always followed this ancient tradition of putting a par value of a penny or two. Were you shown this in your accounting course, this weirdness, this kind of odd thing? I always get kind of blank looks, like some people vaguely remember. I think it depends on the teacher if they bring that up or not. Just add the two damn things together, because it's $500. It's an ancient device. You see this thing right here? This $5, one cent par per share. The reason that that's there is in the old theory of the corporation, the par value represented the liability extent of a shareholder. I own 100 shares of this stock. The debt holders could actually make me pay a dollar out of my own pocket It's the stupidest little device in the world. I don't even know if courts even pay any attention to it in bankruptcy proceedings anymore. But it's always been there. I learned a lesson some years back. I created a corporation. This is why I tell people in the when we talk about corporate matters, there are some states that are really favorable to the formation of corporations and having corporations domiciled in their states, and then there are some that are not. Well, I formed a corporation in Ohio, and I had every intention of taking this thing public. And so I authorized 100 million shares, par value, 1 cent per share. Seemed like, you know, that would be okay. And my intention was to sell maybe 5 million shares of the stock in a penny stock offering, maybe a $2 a share offering, and try to build up the capital. And then I'd have plenty of authorized stock left over to do other things with as time went on, do secondary public offerings. Well, I got the corporation started, and I got my first franchise tax bill. You pay a franchise tax in every state. Well, in Ohio, the franchise tax was based upon the number of shares you had outstanding. And it seemed that the franchise tax was 10 cents a share. Now, how many authorized, not outstanding, authorized. Now, how many shares did I say I authorized in my drunken stupor? 100 million? So guess what the franchise tax bill was for my first year? I called the Secretary of State in Columbus, and I just got, yes, sir, I understand. You got your franchise tax bill. And they let me off the hook. They said, we'll let you close the corporation so you don't owe anything. Thank you. So I learned a lesson there. Authorize, go to a state where things are a little bit calmer. Some states base it upon the number of shares authorized times the par value per share of the authorized. That's the franchise tax. Other states base it upon other features. Some states Illinois here, I think my franchise tax every year is $50 a year. Ohio, a $10 million franchise tax bill. Guess how many corporations I formed in Ohio after that? None. Anyway. But this is just a historical thing. So if you see this odd little twist, common stock at par, additional paid in capital, well, all those two do is add up to be how much you raised selling stock. Okay, so just add them together. There's no meaning to those numbers. Okay, so then you have your retained earnings. And again, the retained earnings, you will have beginning, and then you'll have plus your net income, minus the dividends that didn't get into retained earnings, and that's your retained earnings at the end. Now, you take that number and that number, you add them together, and you get total equity. And it has different names, total common stock, total shareholders' equity. Like I said, we have to look at real financial statements to see this bestiary of words and terms they use for things. You add up the total liabilities and the total equity, and you get your, these two together add up to be the same as total assets, if you've done it right. Total liabilities plus owner's equity equals your total assets. Now, third financial statement, statement of retained earnings. That's nothing but another calculation that's in the balance sheet. It's just a magnification, a detail of a balance sheet item. That's your third financial statement after your income statement and your balance sheet. Then there's a fourth financial statement. Which one have I missed so far? Do any of you know? Yeah, statement of cash flow. Were any of you taught the old term for that sources and uses statement? Were you shown that one? You might hear me use that. That's the word, that's the term we used to use, sources and uses. Now, the sources and uses essentially does this, which means a lot to us in finance. You see that item there on the income statement? Okay, we got our net income. That's an accounting thing. It doesn't exist in the real world. There is no account a company has called net income. There's no checkbook that has at the top net income of such and such corporate. It doesn't exist. It's just a theoretical thing. Because in the real world, some of those things on the income statement don't exist. So, for example, depreciation. There, you don't write a check to depreciation. So we have to add depreciation back into net income because that didn't really go out of our pockets. What went out of our pockets sometime along the way was the price we paid for the building. But depreciation, we have to add that back into net income because we never paid something called depreciation. Another thing that is nasty on financial state accounting statements is that accounting recognizes something when a cash flow, when it is incurred. But that's not when it usually occurs. So I can say I declared a dividend of $1 million. Right away, I put on my financial statements, $1 million went out of the company. But until I write that check, that really didn't happen. So I have to look at things that are payables. And if there's payables go up, that means that they're recognizing things that didn't happen. Similarly with accounts receivable. I mean, and I've gotten into this thing too. It's a complicated story, but the whole deal is that on revenue, you have to say how much you've sold. Whether they've paid you or not, in accounting, it's revenue. But then you have to look at the accounts receivable to see if those have gone up or down, to see if people are actually paying or if you're building more. So one thing I got burned on, one of my first years running this company was I was, you know, like, you can pay me in 2 months. Well, my God, I was recognizing revenue for tax purposes that didn't happen because people hadn't paid me yet. So you have to recognize that if accounts receivable go up, that means that that net income is overstating your income, your actual cash flow. If accounts receivable goes down, that means that money came in that you would already recognize in revenue, so that would be an addition to your cash flow. And also, if I buy a building, that isn't on the income statement, but it sure was money out of my pocket, so I've got to recognize something like that as being an actual cash outflow. Now, I'm going to take you through this because on the quiz, I'm going to say, this changed. What does that mean? Is it an addition to cash flow or a subtraction from cash flow? So let's say I pay off a bond. I retire a bond. Is that an addition to my net income cash flow or is that a subtraction from it? I pay off a bond. What say you? Yeah. Because that's actual money that came out of my pocket, even though I don't show it anywhere on the income statement. Let's try another one. Accounts receivable went up. Would I add that to net income, that increase, or subtract it from net income? Accounts receivable went up. I would subtract it because I said that money happened, but it never did. I had accounts receivable at $300 going into the current fiscal. And then at the end of the fiscal, I have accounts receivable at $400. That means there's $100 in revenue there that never actually happened. So I have to take that out. So accounts receivable going up, you would subtract. Let's try this one. Oh. Woman, you work for me. You earned your paycheck, end of the week. Catch up with you next week. Now, I have recognized on my income statement, salaries and SG&A, that I paid you $100. But I didn't, like I ever am. No, I will. Seriously. So what do I do? My wages payable went up. So should I add $100 to my net income or subtract $100 from my net income? I would add it because I said I paid it to you, but I didn't. You see it? I actually said I paid you $100. So my net income has minus $100 on it. But I never paid you. I can see in the wages payable went up by $100. So even though I said I paid you and I subtracted it to get net income, I didn't. So in other words, that net income is lying $100 on the downside because I got $100 in my pocket that I said I paid you, but I didn't. And the way I know I didn't is because my wages payable went up by the $100 I owed you. You follow that way of thinking about it? If you think about it that way, a lot of accounting, they just say memorize. If a liability goes up, that's an addition to cash flow. If an asset goes up, that's a subtraction from cash flow. If you think about it a little more logically, sometimes you can get through things. Okay, I had depreciation of $1 million for the current year. Depreciation of $1 million. Should I add or subtract $1 million from my net income to see what actual cash flow is? Yeah? I would add. Because I never wrote a check to anyone called depreciation. I always thought about changing my name to depreciation so people would write me checks, you know. But actually, you know, I actually used to go out with a Czechoslovakian girl, but my parents said no because they don't accept checks. The hell with you. You know, I try to be funny. And what do I get for it? Anyway, okay. I just did an issue of $100 million. I sold $100 million of common stock. Should I add $100 million to my net income or subtract $100 million from my net income? Add. Bingo. Add. I mean, it's nowhere in the income statement, but I've got $100 million in my pocket I sure didn't have before. So, yes. So, in other words, an issue of common stock would be an addition because that's nowhere in the income statement whatsoever. You got the hang of it? Because on the on this worksheet that I'm going to have you fill out, and I'll even give you a quick look at that real quick here. God, I wish I had this so I could give it to you. Is there some reason this sucks? Oh, here. Watch, let me show you this. Okay. Well, when it shows up. Okay. That'll show up here in a minute once that projector warms back up. Let me take you back here. I said there were five accounting statements, financial statements, and I have shown you four. What's the other one? And I'll bet you won't think of it because it was never emphasized to you in your accounting classes. Anyone know what it is, the one I've left out? No, that's retained earnings, basically. Statement of stockholders' equity, retained earnings. This is one that we in financial analysis really, really like. And I'll tell you, as a business consultant, I learned how to use this financial statement like a weapon. It's called the notes to the financial statement. In the notes to the financial statement, this is where the company explains how entries were made. What was going on behind the number that is showing up in the income statement or the balance sheet? Well, this increase in common stock was a result of a public offering, or this increase in common stock recognized that the CEO cashed in and then took off for the Bahamas, the son of a bitch, or something like that. This a note might explain something about how the company is planning to retire bonds, what kinds of sinking funds. It will explain, okay, we didn't put this in the financial statement, but we have a lawsuit pending against us, but it is our judgment that the lawsuit doesn't have merit, so we have not recognized the potential loss therefrom. That gives me a clue. Yeah, they're going to lose in court, and they're going to lose a lot of money, but I have to look in the notes of the financial statement to see these subtleties and these nuances. Where I learned about this, real quick here. Where I learned about this years ago, when I was a consultant, I helped companies go public, little companies. And I also helped companies that were dead come back to life. Here's the trick. It was called public shells. We would find companies that had been alive at one time. They had been SEC filing companies, and they had died. They just, you know, the company was still there. It existed as a charter in some state. There was a list of shareholders, but the company was just dead. So the first thing that we would do is we would get the list of the shareholders of this company. We'd send them a letter. We are a group of investors. We lied right there. We are a group of investors, and we are seeking to bring back to life a company in which you have a certain amount of stock. Now, this stock is listed on the pink sheets right now at a half a cent a share. Our plan is to bring this company back to life and merge into it a living company. We would like to do this, but we are going to need a vote of the shareholders to authorize us to do this. And we are going to ask you, in exchange for the work we're going to put in, to grant us 50 million shares of stock. Free. We didn't say free. And we will then get this company started again. Okay, that would be the majority of stock so that we could take over from there and start running the company. And the first things we would do is, first of all, get the SEC filings back up to date because it would be way behind. That was my job. I was an Edgar filing agent. I knew how to do that electronic system, which was very new in that time. And then the next trick. We would have to go to the NASD to get a trading symbol for this company. We didn't want the old trading symbol. We wanted to bring it back under a new name. That required that we file a form called 15CL211. Now, the interesting thing was, back in that time, the SEC was just so loose, they didn't care what anyone did, quite honestly. But the NASD, a self-policing organization, was like a hawk. And every time a company filed for a trading symbol, it would go through their compliance department. Compliance in that era was run by an old, vicious bitch named Claire. She and I became so close, I mean, I thought she was going to name her godchildren after me. The first time I sent financial statements to her, I'd gotten some small-time accounting flunky from Ohio State to sign off that they were audited. I got them through the SEC, but old Claire, there she was, sitting there like an old she-cat waiting for some poor victim to walk into her lair, and she just ate me a new butt. And then after she finally got me to the point where I would call her evil mistress, she started teaching me. She said, here's the thing. She said, you know as well as I do, there's a very small chance this company is going to ever come back to life. And you know as well as I do that accounting statements are based upon the going concern theory. In other words, when you make accounting statements, everything you're doing is assuming that that company is going to keep going so that you can hold debts off and depreciate and amortize and allocate and all of that. So she said, you need to learn how to use the notes to the financial statement. Your financial statements are fine, but you have to disclose in there what it is that's really going on. And then she gave me the script. She said, your very last note to the financial statements, I want you to put this in there. These financial statements have been prepared with the assumption that this firm is a going concern. That assumption is speculative, and investors should be forewarned that these financial statements may not be relevant if this company is not a going concern. She told me just how to say it. So, in other words, any investor who had any brain at all would go to the notes of the financial statement and hit that last one and say, oh my God, this company's financial statements are meaningless because they're prepared in a way that this company doesn't meet. Notes to the financial statement, read them. Some son of a bitch like me might have written them. Okay? Claire finally died. I sent Rose. I couldn't get to New York City, but she was one of those people that you meet in your life that is so mean to you, but you after a while, she taught me so much about how it really works. And we got a trading, and I got it was so cool. I got a trading symbol for a company. And that was the first of many. And then the state regulators started trying to arrest me before preparing 15 C-211s without being a lawyer. But I can say that now because statute of limitations has passed. Oh, seriously, noobs, I wouldn't tell you this on a recording if it wasn't the case. In fact, in one case, Utah, a state regulator, a securities regulator, he had a bead on me. I mean, that guy wanted me dead. He wanted me in jail, prison. And I was scared to go there. And finally, we had this conversation. It was the weirdest thing. It started out with him. He said, I'm going to find you. I'm going to prosecute you. I'm going to have you extradited. And then somehow I was able to turn the conversation around, and we started talking about my interest in Mormonism. I shit you not. He sent me literature. We talked, and that was how I got. He didn't prosecute me because he thought I was interested in Mormonism. And that's the first time in my life I thought to myself, I am going to hell. I mean, I killed people. That didn't bother me. But this. No, I'm not a Mormon. Do I look? No, anyway.
Can you go back and explain how when the accounts receivable go up, net income?
Well, I have to subtract that amount. Okay. I have sold you some of my artwork. Okay. It came to a total of $600. And you said, I don't have the $600. And I said, that's okay, I'll extend you. And so you pay me $400 would right there and then there's $200 that you're going to owe me. So $400 goes to cash, and $200 goes to accounts receivable. You buy that, right? Okay, I debit these two. But $600 went to revenue. Do I have $600 in my pocket? I have only. So in other words, my accounts receivable pop by $200. This son of a bitch owes me money too, but that's from long ago. But you are current, so it popped $200. So in other words, this net income is lying by saying that I had $200 more in cash than I actually have. So because this went up $200, I have to take that off down here. You buy it? If you think about it too much, you will go insane or become an accountant, but I repeat myself. Ma'am. Is there some reason why this projector sucks? Oh, there it is. Now, all I want for you to do for this one, this part of the quiz, and this is, it's available. Don't start writing like a violent fool or anything right here. You'll have a chance to do that in a minute. But see, you'll just put a plus or a minus to show events. That's all you do with this section, okay? And then you transfer those to ReggieNet as a plus or a minus in the box, in the relevant box. So that's all there is to that section. Now, I'll turn that back on here in a second once I've gotten rid of all this stuff. But remember how these fit together. It's like a puzzle. Oh, I shouldn't bring up one thing. You see this cost of goods sold here? That's not on all financial statements. Cost of goods sold is stuff that is actually directly attributable. You can match up. I sold $400 worth of stuff, and I can exactly match, let's say, $100 to the cost of goods sold. There are a lot of expenses that are with a firm. Some of them, if you're producing stuff. Now, if it's a service firm, there's really nothing that you can exactly attribute. But with anything that has any manufacturing in it, let me give you an example. I will take a nice, beautiful photograph. I got a couple of real dandies yesterday, and just great. And I got one, okay, I'm going to frame this. I'm going to print it, frame it, do a nice mat. Now, the frame I'm going to frame, let's say, cost me, in this case, that would probably be, that one's going to be about a $35 frame. The mat, I'm going to buy a mat board, and I'm going to cut a mat, probably a double mat for this. And then I'm going to use printer ink from a massive professional printer that sounds like a jet engine when it's doing its thing, on very high quality Epson premium luster paper. And I'm also going to do a few other things. I'm going to sign with a gold pen, pretty on that. Understand that the total cost of producing that work of art, I'm going to sell it for $200. Let's say I do $200. Realistically, I can clearly attach the frame cost to it. No question. There is $35 of that $200 is that frame. Now, you could argue that the mat is too. Probably not, because I can end up cutting a couple of different mats and along with a few fingers and leave blood around before I get a mat that's exactly right. So even though it seems like I could attach the mat cost to the frame, not really. The printer ink, how in the hell would I know exactly how much of those 11 printer cartridges ink I use for this print? Can't do it. So you see, there are a lot of costs of making something. Some of those right on the button, but others of them, you can't do it. You decide that you're going to start selling dried flower arrangements in baskets with a nice ribbon and some potpourri in there and some other ingredients I'll mention in a minute. Now, you sell these for $10. Obviously, the basket, that would be a cost of goods sold. You can directly nail that to that basket. The ribbon, well, are you going to use exactly the same amount of ribbon every... Probably not. The potpourri. Sometimes you just sprinkle a little bit, but sometimes you put it... Now let's talk about that last ingredient that goes into those baskets. We're talking about love. How... Did I just have a stroke behind... No, it's bright light. It's either Jesus coming to kick my ass or... Shut the hell up. Okay, but do you understand? I can't attribute some things. Other things, right on the button, but some things not. So the cost of goods sold would be directly attributable. But if you're a service industry, there's nothing really. So you wouldn't see a cost of goods sold line on it for something that was all pure service. Okay, now let me go and show you how to do what we're doing here. Now, these are two different companies. For God's sake, don't say, what does Company A have to do with Company B? They're different companies. I'm just going to show you A is for my example. B is the one you do on your own. So, let's look here. Well, we're going to do Company A here, okay? Well, I need net income, but to get net income, I have to have expenses. So, I'm SOL... on that one. What else could I look at? Okay. If I had current assets plus non-current assets, I could get total assets. Again, nope, can't do that one. Let me look around a little bit. Non-current assets. Current liabilities plus non-current. Oh, well, oh my God, spank me Muhammad. Cripe, I could lose my head for saying that. Looky there. I can fill in that guy right there. You see it? What would that one be? 100,000. Is there some reason why I can't? That sucks. Why can't I fill anything? Well, that just rotates my ass. Hang on. Oh, I know what's going on. Is it a it's a read only. Oh, well, how the hell do I get rid of that? That really helped. Oh, there we go. Thought copy. Okay. 100,000. You know what? I can't even put it in there. Okay, so just do it yourself. I can't even type the stupid thing in there. That's 100,000 there. Okay, so now we have the total liabilities. That helps us a little bit. Look at the retained earnings. Now, you remember there's a formula that I can use here. Retained earnings beginning plus net income minus dividends would get us retained earnings at the end. Well, look at that. We have three of the four pieces. Do you see it? Again, retained earnings at the beginning plus net income minus dividends paid is retained earnings at the end. The only piece we don't have here is the net income, so I can back into it. So in other words, I can take retained earnings at the end. I can add back the dividends to make $340,000. And then I can... So in other words, $300,000 plus what? Minus $70,000 equals
$270,000.
Well, never mind that. Let's do one at a time here. Net income. Can you tell me what it'll be? $40,000. So I got $40,000 would have to be the net income. In order, $300,000 plus $40,000 is $340,000 minus $70,000 is $270,000. So net income has to be $40,000. So $200,000 minus what makes $40,000? $160,000. Boy, I don't know why it's, oh well, anyway. Okay, so we filled in that piece. So now we've gotten down to the point where, okay, we've got now our capital stock and paid in capital is 520. We know our total liabilities are 140. So do we know what our total assets are? Or have I missed something? Okay, retained earnings at the end are 270. Capital stock plus additional paid in capital is 520. So we know that 270 plus 520 is what? 270 plus 520 is 790. That's your total stockholders' equity is 790. So now we know 790 plus your total liabilities, 140. 790 plus 140 is what? 930. So that would have to be my total assets, 930. Now, current assets, 80 plus non-current assets has to be 930. So we've got then current assets, 80 plus what will be 930. What is it? 850, is it? My mind is kind of drawing a blank because I'm not writing anything down. I'm trying to put too many things, memorize too many things in my head. In other words, the way you do these is to just work your way out. Find something that is vulnerable to calculation. So to start you out real quick on the next one, Well, I don't have any way to get revenues or net income because I have just expenses. Well, that sucks too because I don't have something here. If I were to look around, non-current assets plus current assets equals total assets. So since I know total assets and non-current assets, I can get current assets. Do you see that? Let me make sure. See, I've got a blank here on current assets, but I know that those plus 180,000 equals 410,000. So that one would have to be what? 230,000 right there? Is that right? That's how you do that one. So I even gave you one piece of this one. You got this one all finished up. Can someone tell me what I got? What were the numbers here, just so you have them? 160, 40, and then down here, 850, 930, 100, wait, it was 100? Okay. And then the last, 790. Okay, so you got all the numbers there, and I even gave you one of them here, so you should be able to put it in fine. Okay, that one's that one, and then the other part is just put together a quick, dirty financial statement, get the numbers for that, and then I showed you this part, and that's your ReggieNet Quiz 3. You should ace it. That's all I have for you. Go home.